Next Chapter Podcasts.
Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Welcome back to another session of Thick Skin with Jock and Hawk. I'm Jock Jones.
And I'm LaTroy Hawkins.
This show is called Thick Skin because you have to have thick skin to be in the spotlight. Whether you're a professional athlete like me and Hawk, who played in the bigs, or you're an entertainer, the media will come after you.
So you better be ready. We're here to tell it like it is, correcting the media when they get it wrong, and dive deep into the world of sports, all sports, and entertainment from an athlete's perspective.
We got a great show ahead for you today. Make sure to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. All right, Hawkey, let's dive right into it. What do we got?
What we got? I would like to start off. Let's talk about the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah.
What they did to the Dirty Birds.
Yep.
I'm not a football guy, but my understanding is when you go into the victory formation, which is where you hike the ball, both sides had conceded that the score is going to stay the same. You're not trying to score. I don't care if you're on the 2-inch yard line, and you hike the ball to the quarterback and you kind of take one step back. Cause I always see that they get a negative yard for that. So they take a step back and they knee the ball. Well, this past Sunday, Mr. Winston and his offensive line decided they wanted to get their running back a touchdown for the year. He had 17. I guess he led the league in touchdowns last year and didn't have one this year. And they faked like they were going to do the victory formation and handed the ball off and he scored a touchdown. What do you got on that, Double J?
The only thing, two things I don't like about that play is lining up in the V formation and then running the play. And then the other thing that I really didn't like about that play is, like I told you before, having 16 weeks to get your teammate a touchdown and he didn't get it. And then all of a sudden you want to get it in the last play of the season or the last couple plays of the season. Like that didn't sit well with me, right? So I didn't like, I mean, the his heart was in the right place. He wanted to do something nice for his teammate, but like you had 16 weeks and I'm sure there were some mop up situations in the course of the season that would have allowed him to get a touchdown. So I wasn't really on that idea.
What do you have on him disobeying a direct order? And I'm sure it's not that harsh of a – the way I said it is a harsh way to put it.
Right.
But you have the head coach of the team.
Yeah. It's a hierarchy.
Right. When you don't win, everything lands on his plate.
Right.
And when they do win, it's like the quarterback. When they do win, he gives all the credit to everybody else.
Right.
And I think for me it shows a lack of respect for the guy –
right.
Who sits in the big office. And like, again, like you said, his heart was in a great place. And I'm listening to so many guys talk about it, and NFL guys all over.
Yeah, I've been seeing it.
You know, had RG3 was talking about it. Shannon Sharpe said that he needed to be cut.
Yeah.
I'll cut him this morning.
Yeah.
Wouldn't go that far.
No.
But he would have to come in the principal's office. We got to have a serious conversation.
Absolutely.
And a lot of the people in the New Orleans, within the New Orleans fan base, they didn't see anything wrong with it. They were more upset the way Atlanta's coach approached New Orleans coach. They were more upset about that. Well, he wouldn't have did that to Sean Payton and this and that. And like,
he would have did to anybody, I believe.
I think he would have did it to anybody. And I said, only reason that New Orleans coach played it the way he did because
he didn't know.
He knew it was wrong.
Right. And he did not know that he was overridden by Winston, right? He was just as shocked probably as the Falcons coach was that it happened. But at the same time, he's still a man where he's like, hey, like, I don't appreciate the way you're coming at me, knowing that, you know, you not knowing that I didn't know what was going on, but still, you know? And like you said, there's ex-teammates that came to Jameis Winston's defense. There's current teammates that came to his defense. But still, man, like you said, if you're going to do that, line it up, let the other team know what's going on, you know, let them know what's coming and do your thing. And then you wouldn't have that situation.
And I always said, nobody said he wasn't a good dude. Like, I'm right. Fine with him being a good dude, right. But you can be a good dude and make a bad decision.
Right.
And my thing is, like, also with the situation, apologize. Like you said, some people don't need to apologize, but for that, I think the least you say, I'm sorry, I made a bad judgment, turn the page right then. That you don't have to say anything else.
Right.
You don't have to go back and forth with the media.
Right.
Now we're on the media side. Thick skin show is on the media side.
Right.
You don't have to go back and forth and make a joke and add to your post-career highlight reel that'll be viral.
Right.
You don't have to do that. I just thought it was in bad taste, and I would have been upset. But after a great week of NFL football this past weekend, we'll move on to our boy Draymond Green. As you know, he's been suspended indefinitely, and Mr. Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, decided to let him back after missing 12 games. And he went on his podcast, the Draymond Green Show, and I don't know, would you call it, Jockey issued an apology, or he wanted to ramble a little bit and try to make it seem like he made some changes. What do you have on it?
I think it was kind of an apology. It was an acknowledgement of, you know, some wrongdoings. It was acknowledgement of some things that his peers said, namely Kevin Durant. I know that was one that kind of caught him off guard, and he did address that, and he took the phrase getting some help wrong, and he thought about it after a while, just getting what I was getting from his podcast. He thought about it for a while, and it wasn't necessarily a negative thing. It was just he figured that they were coming from a point of concern. Right. But my thing on this whole Draymond Green situation is, like, you sock a teammate, you choke out another NBA player, and then you backhand another NBA player. Right. But you're only sorry about the last one that you got suspended indefinitely for. So, I acknowledged a lot of the stuff that he said, but I wasn't really on the whole, you know, apology thing.
Well, when his last incident after the game, he came out and talked about it, and he said, you know me. If I do it intentionally, I'm not apologizing. He said, I'm apologizing to this guy because this wasn't intentional. Man, let's get to it. Draymond from Saginaw, Michigan, man. They different from over there. They're a little different. And I'm a firm believer that every team needs a Dennis Rodman. Now, he has a little bit more talent than Dennis Rodman, but every team needs a guy who's going to do the dirty work so your superstars don't have to do it. Does he go overboard sometime? Sure he does. Did he punch a teammate? He sure did punch Poole in the mouth. Why Poole didn't punch him back in the freaking mouth?
I don't know, bro.
I don't understand. Like, everybody talk about, oh, there's so many tough guys in the league, but I don't see anybody stepping to Draymond. They show that one clip of him and Ron Artest, you know, face to face. But who else? Like, I don't get it. Like,
you can ask us the same question. Do you see him approaching certain people like that in the NBA that he chooses to approach other people with?
I don't think he has a problem. I don't think he has a problem.
But there's been other skirmishes, and he ain't went after, you know.
Well, you ain't going to win them all, Natch.
That's what I'm trying to tell you.
But he ain't afraid.
That had nothing to do with being afraid, my brother. You don't have to be afraid. Hey, Earl Spence wasn't afraid and Terrence Crawford whooped his ass. It ain't not about being afraid.
Man, we're talking about pros and we're talking about basketball
players. I get it, but I'm talking about people who fight for a living. Yeah, it's not about being afraid, bro. It's just, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, I mean, look, like you said, every team needs an enforcer. The NBA was rampant with enforcers back in the day, bro, until they start changing the rules up. All I'm saying is this, right? Draymond Green, be who you are. But at the same time, also know that you're affecting the whole team when you do stuff like this and they take you away from the team, or you're away from the team for however long, you know, they decide to suspend them. That's all I'm saying.
Well, we can go a little deeper. We go a little deeper and we talk about he's who he's always been.
Yes.
When they were winning, the media was okay with it. But now that they're not as good as they were in the past when they were winning championships, now it's a problem.
Yeah.
Now it's a problem. So, again, the old saying is what? Winning cures everything.
Right.
Winning makes dysfunctional shit look okay.
I totally agree, but like you said, winning. When he was not playing, they were not winning.
They weren't winning when he was playing.
They had a better chance to win when he's playing.
That's debatable. That's debatable. And I'm just talking shit right now because I don't watch the
both. You and me both.
But it's just the whole thing. Like he talked about his champion of change in his podcast last night, and it's accepting. There is a place for growth. You got to accept it. He said he accepted it. And, you know, I found that he was talking about, I was at home for 2 days in my man cave and nobody knew I was home but my wife. And my daughter called me my 3-year-old or 4-year-old called me on FaceTime. Daddy, you're in the man cave. And she hung up the phone and ran to the man cave.
The man cave, yep. 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 And he had to explain to his daughters why he was at home and why his team was playing. And yeah, I get it. I understand it, you know.
I thought it was just it was just one of those things. But I have an issue with Stephen A. Asking the question about Stefan, why Stefan hadn't been held accountable for another man's actions.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Because every time somebody on LeBron's team, we hold LeBron at a higher standard. Don't say we, because I ain't French. I ain't French. Don't say we, say you, not me. I don't hold LeBron to a higher because a grown man decided to do something else. I refuse to do it.
And you can't control what another man does either.
Nope, not at all. And you can be a good leader. And your eyes and what you see as a good leader don't have squatly shit to do what goes on in NBA clubhouse or NFL clubhouse or Major League Baseball clubhouse. Nope. So again, for me, I thought he was just saying, throwing stuff out there, trying to make headlines. And he don't need to do that because he's really good at his damn job.
He's really good.
Yeah, he's good at his job. And he was on TV today talking about he ain't running from no smoke. Anybody can call me, but you better call me with context and this and that and don't misquote me. And I like when he go off like that. I like when he go off like that because he started looking like a little pre-Madonna.
Standing in the truth like my man Cat Williams.
Hey, and he earned that right.
That's what I'm saying.
So what's the importance of having the support of your peers, your organization, during stressful situations like the stress that Draymond brought upon himself?
I think it's huge, bro. I think it's huge because that shows, look, you can fool the front office, you can fool the fans, but you cannot fool your teammates, right? You cannot fool your teammates. So no matter what it looks like to the public, his teammates see him every day. They're in the grind with him. They're in the foxhole with him. So they see who he is, how he reacts to different situations, what he means to the team, you know how he is with his teammates. So to have those guys stick. And when you go through stuff like that, right, you start side-eyeing everybody. You look at everybody and see how's he treat me? He's not looking at me. Oh, he's not talking to me the same, right? Whatever you see in your mind is what you see. So when guys come to your defense, a la Jameis Winston, who we just talked about, and Draymond Green, when guys come to your defense and don't turn their back on you and don't shy away from the situation, that says a lot about how they feel about you and who you are as a person.
Yeah, so I know you've had a lot of experience with this. And
yep.
Why do you think – I know in Draymond's – in his podcast, he said he's been going to therapy.
Yeah.
But why do you think as African-American men, we have this stigma about going to talk to somebody, telling somebody our business – and not understanding that it's something that can definitely help you unlock some of your traumas, your childhood traumas, your adult traumas, and help you just work through that. So why do you think we're always the last one to the party?
Well, let me start by saying I'm not French, but I'm gonna use the word we. Okay. We as Black men are seen as strong. We're seen as superhuman. We're seen as tough, right? We're not when we show emotions, it's viewed as something totally different than, you know, the next person. So to tell someone that you're going to therapy or feeling like you need therapy sometimes makes you feel inferior, when in fact that makes you strong, or stronger than you are. Because seeking help, seeking another opinion, seeking clarity, seeking, you know, strength, and letting people know, hey, man, I'm strong, but I still need a support system or a support group. Like, to me, that elevates a person in my eyes, because like you said, hey, man, I've been in therapy for 19 years already, and I do it every Tuesday morning. And I'm not ashamed to tell people that I go to therapy every Tuesday morning. And it's helped me out immensely, because I have somebody that knows me, and we've gotten to know each other. And like, I can tell her almost anything, and she's right there with me. And she was with me when I was going through my situation. She showed up to court 4 days in a row, bro. She cleared her schedule and showed up for me 4 days in a row. You know what I'm saying? So like, wow. I'm an advocate for Black men going to therapy.
So for me, like, I've tried it three different occasions, mm-hmm. and I hadn't got to the point, I don't think, where I can see it through. Mm-hmm. and I know they say that you have to be completely transparent, you know, when you're in there, unless you're not going to get anything out of it.
Yeah.
The older I get, the more I wish, the more I want, because I'm going to do it again.
Yeah.
The more I want to just sit and talk to somebody that's not judging me for my thoughts, my actions, my past, mm-hmm. what I want in the future. So I think for we and us as African-American males, we carry so much stress by ourselves.
Absolutely.
We carry the load of everyone in the household,
yep.
everyone in the family,
yep.
on our backs.
Yep.
And like you said, we walk around like we're the strongest people in the world, but deep down inside, that's that little boy in you that's screaming for help, mm-hmm. that you won't allow to have a voice because of you're worried about the way your external validation is going to look at you. External validation.
Yeah, how you perceive. You worry about the way you're perceived.
Right.
Bottom line.
Here on our Thick Skin podcast, we're going to advocate for more, not just African-American males, period.
Yep.
Pulling down your armor, taking down off the shield, and go talk to somebody.
Yeah.
Go talk to Have an honest conversation with yourself first, and try to understand what you want to get out of, you know, talking to someone. And, you know, most parts of my life, when I start something, I'm going to finish it.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that I feel I've not, that's one of those things that I have not finished in my life. And that's, you know, starting therapy and finishing therapy. And
yeah,
I'm going to work, but I'll just ask the listeners, if you're a male, African-American male, and women too, but we're talking specifically about African-American males and males in general,
yep,
that find you a therapist that you can talk to. And find your therapist. We have so many traumas that we suppress.
So that's the key, buddy, that you said. One was a key thing was see it through, right? You're going to have to see this thing through. You're going to have to see a few things through, right? But finding somebody that you trust is huge. So maybe you got to interview a couple people. I don't know. But I stumbled across this lady in San Diego, and she was just a godsend for me, bro, because I was going through so many different things at one time. And so she was patient with me. I was patient with her. And here we are 10 years later. And it's just the best thing that I could have done. So
best thing you've
done? Yeah, it was one of the best things I could have done. So like you said, I'm with you, buddy. And I advocate for African-American men and men in general to, it's okay to go to therapy. It's okay to talk about there. It's okay to let other people know, because by you being strong enough to let everybody else know, you might convince somebody else to take a chance at it and try it.
And I think now, this day and age where we are, it is definitely more acceptable in our community, in our culture, wherever, because of we know mental health is so important. It's like, I mean, we finally understood that, no, he's not crazy. No, he's having a mental health crisis. You know, that was the thing back in the day, man. They crazy. Like, come on, man. Now we know, like, it's real, man. And I think as one thing, I'll tip my hat and give all the kudos to a lot of the entertainers, actors, actresses, whatever you do to entertain, the athletes. You know, I like Kevin Love when he was in Minnesota, and then when he went to Cleveland and he had to come out and talk about his mental health issues. And, you know, that's courage, because you could be a guy that's working a 9-to-5 job and you having the same issues, and you don't have to deal with, you know, every fan in that fan base. You don't have to worry about that.
Right.
But he has to worry about every fan in his fan base who's probably going to rally around him. But he also has to worry about going on the road to 31 other cities. And that fan base is probably going to use his strength.
That's okay.
Against him.
That's okay. Thick skin.
Okay. That's a thick skin moment right there. That's our thick skin moment. So I always, you know, once he went to Cleveland and he talked about his mental health issues, I had to tip my hat to him. And I was like, I started to really, really dig in and understand what he was going through. And you know what? I applaud the man for being courageous, because he didn't have to be. He didn't have to be. And just because you're on TV running and dunking a baseball or hitting home runs or striking out the side or, you know, throwing dimes on a football field,
yep,
you know, you have issues. But we're going to move on to, we got two minor league pitchers, man.
Mm.
Tested positive.
Mm.
Damn, Jock, I've been done 8 years. How long have you been done?
11 or 12.
And people still getting popped for,
mm-hmm,
for steroids or performing enhancing drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Hayter Blanco with the Pittsburgh Pirates and Ismael Laureano. Mm-hmm. They both were popped for a performance enhancing drug.
Mm-hmm.
We both played during the steroid era.
Yep.
We both endured that. We lived through it. We made it.
Yep.
What are some of your pet peeves about the steroid era from the media's perspective? When we were in it, everything that you were hearing from the media.
Yeah. I'm neutral on the situation, right? I just didn't care. I was so busy with my career, I didn't care what another man was doing, right? Did I beat some guys who were cheating? Yeah. Did I beat some guys who weren't cheating? Yeah. Did guys who were cheating beat other guys who were cheating and vice versa? Absolutely. But I did not care one way or the other, right? What bothers me about the whole situation is I'm a lot of a smart ass, right? So I would say, hey, take the steroids and send them in the batter's box.
Whoa. You're what?
A lot of a smart ass. Okay. Right?
Okay.
Right. I'll say take the steroids and send them in the box. Take the steroids and put them on the pitcher's mound and see what they do. They don't do anything. They do nothing, right? Put them in a guy. Do they make them better? Yeah. Did they make some guys worse?
Yeah.
There was a bunch of guys who did it that didn't get caught that it didn't do anything for, right? But they pick a couple guys, right, and say, oh, well, look what it did for him and look what it did for him. Okay, but look what it did for 30 or 40, 50 of these other guys who took it and didn't get caught. It didn't do anything for them, right? Either you can play or you can't. But the thing is, in July, in August, in September, in October, you're paying to see a guy perform at his peak performance, right? To me, steroids was big at helping guys stay on the field, helping guys stay fresh, right? So you boo guys when they suck and you cheer for guys when they're good. Now you got guys who are fresh for 6 months out of the year. Steroids wasn't my issue. Amphetamines were, and they weren't even an issue, but they were the biggest they were the biggest thing in the game than steroids, right? Yeah, guys popping greenies all the time.
Long time.
For a long time, right?
Yeah.
Some of your favorite guys, some of your least favorite, but they were like, when they took greenies out, then that's when things started to slide. It wasn't steroids to me. It was amphetamines. So rules are rules, and if you break them, you get 80-game suspensions, and then you get a whole 162-game suspension, and then you get pop two or three, whatever. But, like, I'm like, whatever. If you want to do it, do it. If you don't, that's on you. I don't care.
So I'm probably about 80% exactly like you, Jack. Like you said, I was so worried about my career and how I can get better the right way.
Right.
And I didn't pay attention to it. I really didn't. But I think about how the media portrayed guys like us.
Right.
Who didn't do it.
Right.
They portrayed us as the guys who were standing outside the bathroom stall.
Right.
While the guy was shooting up in the stall and we were the lookout.
Right.
The way they portrayed us to be. That's the way I took it when we were in it. And that was so far from the truth.
Of course.
The steroid thing was just like anybody else, any other situation when you're doing wrong. If you got a group of guys that do drugs, they're going to hang around the guys who do, well, steroid is a drug.
Right.
But if you got a group of guys that gamble, they're going to hang around the guys that gamble.
Yep.
You know, you got the group of guys that are womanizers. They're going to hang out with the other guys that are womanizers.
There you go.
It's the same with the steroids. The steroid guys, they wouldn't walk around this clubhouse with a syringe stuck in their butt.
Right.
They wouldn't walk around rubbing the magic cream on their arm.
Yeah, or saying, hey, shoot me up.
Oh, yeah. They were doing it, you know, secretly.
Right.
And rightfully so. You do stuff secretly because you don't want to get caught and you know it's wrong.
Right.
But the media made it seem like guys like myself and you.
Like we knew were like, what was going on.
Go ahead and shoot up. I'll watch the door to make sure nobody comes in and catch you.
Right.
It wasn't like
no. My knife behind was thinking, hey man, this guy worked hard in the offseason and he came back in good shape. You understand what I'm saying? Up until guys, you know, that whole Mitchell report thing came out and all that. Up until that point, I was like, okay, he went home and did what he had to do. But you know,
they definitely can make a movie about all the guys who did steroids and it didn't help.
Right.
Guys who did steroids and it ruined their careers.
Right. Because the Mitchell report was like hundreds of players long. It wasn't just a handful. It was hundreds of players long.
Yeah. I got an issue with the Mitchell report also, just because.
I got it. It was supposed to be anonymous. And when they got names attached to it.
And we supposed to believe them with names that they released, names that they wanted to release. I'm not buying it. You already lied to me about the it being anonymous, and then all of a sudden these names start popping up.
Yep.
Hell, I'm from the hood. I got better sense than that. I'm not going to trust you twice.
Hell no.
That.
Mm-mm. But yeah, man, these guys, I mean, hey, you risk doing it, and then you got to pay the piper once you get caught. So,
but it's kind of like, I think the last few years has been all Latin guys who've been caught, majority. There's been some American guys, I hadn't really heard about it, but when I actually pay attention to that, usually Latin guys, and I think they're at a disadvantage because of, I'm guessing, their pharmacies. They don't have as many, you know, rules and regulations mm-hmm. as we have over here, and that's just a small case. That's small case scenario, and then you got guys who blatantly just tried to, you know, cheat the system. But I think Major League Baseball needs to do a better job at regulating what these guys can, what they can take back to the DR with them, so they don't have to take some of the stuff that they're getting from their local pharmacies or wherever they're getting the stuff. Some has to give, because I've only seen majority of the guys getting busted this day and age are young Dominican players. And Tatis, he got popped. I mean, like, we got some superstars in the game, and they're from the Dominican. They're getting popped.
Yeah.
We need to figure that out. We really do. We had a national championship game on Monday night.
Yes, sir.
I won two bets. I bet my father-in-law $5. I won that. And I bet Pat Mahomes, he wanted a bottle of Jack Daniel's Sinatra, and I wanted a bottle of E.H. Taylor.
Okay.
Barrel proof.
Okay.
So, and I think Michigan went out there and dominated.
They did.
They dominated.
They did.
They dominated.
They did. They have Penix on the move the whole night. And
right. He had to think fast, and he didn't make a lot of the right decisions.
No. And
I wanted to
Pac-12 to win, because, you know, it's the last year of the Pac-12, because right now it's the Pac-2. And and I wanted them. I'll tell you what, I wanted Washington to win, but I was okay with Michigan winning as well, because of the whole scandal and all the stuff they were going through the whole year with Harbaugh getting suspended for these couple weeks and that couple weeks, and the sign stealing, and then not really comparing them to the Astros, but it was really the same thing, right? It was really the same thing, because, like, you did something you weren't supposed to do, but they weren't treated as nearly as bad as people still treat the Astros. You know what I'm saying? So to overcome all that and then win the national championship, I was glad that they, you know, I wasn't shooken up that they won the whole thing.
The offense played, they started off great.
Yeah.
Then Washington started to figure it out.
They made adjustments.
Then I think the last half of the fourth quarter, they played a lot better, the offense. But you have to give – Michigan won this championship because of their defense.
Of course.
They made the old lefty very, very, very uncomfortable. He had the happiest feet he's had in college in the national championship game. Hopefully he takes something from that. And he can learn, and when he gets to the next level, it won't be as glaring of an issue for him. But he missed some throws, but it all because of that pressure.
Yeah, he missed some throws, man. But you got to give, again, the problem that USC and UCLA and Washington and Oregon and all these teams that are going to the Big Ten, the problem that they're going to have is just what happened in the national championship game. Like,
physicality.
You get worn down up front. You get worn down with the defensive line. You get worn down with the offensive line. And for four quarters, they're just coming at you. They're just coming. Skill position-wise, all these teams could match up with these teams in the Big Ten, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in the trenches is where the games are won, and that's where the game was won in the national championship. It was won in the trenches. And you can tell by the fourth quarter, Michigan was having their way with Washington however they wanted to. So
– and it felt like the whole game that the lefty was going to make a mistake, because he threw some errant, he made some errant throws, and he finally made that one. And golly, it's just amazing. Like how many different circumstances could have been different that would have changed that game. First quarter, when his wide receiver, they kind of got, you know, crossed up a little bit, but he still was able to make the throw. probably had to throw it just a little earlier than he wanted to because of the pressure from Michigan. But those missed opportunities were crucial for Washington. They had some missed opportunities. But the running back got hurt one of the first or second series, so that didn't bode well for them. But he gutted it out, and he was able to go out there and continue to give them all he could. But it was just – man, it's just like the whole game is just – it just didn't seem like Washington was ever going to just break off and do one of their – make the game close like they had, in all their other victories.
Yep.
Well, Jock, it's always a pleasure, man.
Always, Hawks.
Whoa, about our boy, my fellow Hoosier from the great state of Indiana.
Oh.
Noah.
Oh.
Noah. Mr. Noah. Kanega. He's a football player, basketball star,
yeah,
at Lawrenceburg High School, right on the border of Ohio and Indiana, close down towards Cincinnati. And you and I have a mutual friend.
Yep, Kelsey Parker.
All-American in all three sports, coming out of Lawrence. 1993, first-round pick with the Twins.
Yep, sandwich pick.
And he's quite the athlete. And he's going to play at the next level, at the D1 level. And there are going to be some... It's gonna be a mess with the announcers, man. Somebody's bound to mess it up. Do you give them a pass, or you allow them to make a couple mistakes and then you better get it right? Which one?
You can allow them to make a couple mistakes, but at some point you got to get it right, because you can mix that one up really. RG3 had a field day with that name until he realize what and how it's pronounced. But that's gonna be I'm gonna watch that very close.
I just feel sorry for the first person that pronounces it wrong. They're gonna be memes instantly. Before you get off the air, they're gonna be memes. And
Can you pronounce his last name for our subscribers and viewers and people out there in podcast land? Can you pronounce his last name for us so that they know how to pronounce
his name? His name is Noah, and his parents is K-N-O-A-H. And his last name is Kanega, and it's K-U-H-N-A-Y-G. U-H, Kanega.
Okay.
Kanega.
All right.
Whatever your mind tells you, whatever your mind, your eyes tell you that you see, don't believe your eyes. Don't believe your eyes. Your eyes will get you in trouble this time. It's Kanega. Noah Kanega. I just hope his middle name doesn't start with a K. Then that's even worse.
That's even worse. Please no. Please no.
Oh man, jeez, that's gonna be rough on a couple of announcers early on. Hopefully by midway through his first freshman year in college, we won't have to talk about his name again.
I'm hoping not. There's a couple of announcers that got in hot water this past year for their pronunciation of that word. So hopefully they don't make the same mistakes as those guys made.
Our buddy over in San Francisco, they're visiting Kansas City. No, Oakland. Oakland. Yeah, Oakland. Oakland.
Oakland.
Oakland. Oakland.
And they were talking about the Negro League Museum.
Yeah. Poor fellow. Yeah, really. But I always think about being on air, man. Like, I could say anything, like just misspeak, and I could be canceled.
For sure.
You know, people get their underwear and their pajamas in a wad about me saying Jesus on air. When they say it, I always get I get something in my ear. Hey, LaTroy, can't say that, and this and that. I'm like, I say, why do people get to tell me how to talk to my Jesus? I don't get it. And I said, Jesus Christ, that's not a strike. They act like I said the MF word and followed it with Jesus Christ. Like, people are so...
I get it.
It's amazing when you want to pull the religion card. It blows my mind. They want to pull the religion card. I said, Jesus Christ.
Everything you say offends somebody.
No, that's true. This is true. First thing on Twitter, they hit me up. I love to hear you speak on television. I love the way you explain the game, but can you not use the Lord's name in vain? You know what I do? I send him the middle finger. Man, you don't tell me how to speak to my God or my Jesus. You don't. You don't get to tell me that. I don't tell you how to speak to your God.
Yeah.
I don't do it.
Yeah.
But I'm talking shit right now. I got to work on that. But I don't do it that often. But when I do, I'm like, man, Jesus, that was a strike. It's just natural. It beat saying the F word, and that was a strike.
I don't get you know it, bro.
I got thick skin.
Yeah, we got thick skin. We definitely have thick skin.
But again, it's always a pleasure, Jock.
All right, Hawkey.
You know, you and I get to, you know, shoot the shit.
That's right. Before we get out of here, just know I'm over at Twins Fantasy Camp, and I got fined for $100 because Bert Blyleven, who we'll have on the show here in the next few weeks, I was on the phone talking to my mom back home, and it was in between games, and he was like, "Oh, Jock Jones is on his freaking cell phone, and I know he's got this podcast with LaTroy," and so I got fined $100, and he told me to tell you that you owe 50. Because you're part of my podcast. So you want to give Bert the middle finger?
No, I'm not giving Bert the middle finger. I got way too much respect for the Hall of Famer. But I'll whisper a little something in his ear when I see him in spring training.
All right.
But tell him I'm paying him 50. I'll sell you to 50 right now.
All right, I'll tell him.
Bert, I said just be home by 11, all right?
Bert, be home by 11.
Porn, Satan, drugs, therapy. It's not just the list of what I'm up to this weekend. I'm comedian Kiki Anderson, and those are just a handful of the taboo topics I've poked and prodded at so far on my podcast, Indecent, the show where we peel at the wallpaper of polite society. Each episode digs into the dark underbelly of our culture to dissect the things we aren't allowed to talk about around the dinner table, featuring conversations with comedians, activists, journalists, academics. They all help me figure out the who, what, and why behind what is and isn't acceptable behavior. Indecent with Kiki Anderson, where NSFW meets LMAO. Mwah.
Get ready, race fans, because the ultimate NASCAR experience is about to hit the airwaves. Welcome to Pit Pass NASCAR, the podcast that takes you deep into the heart-pounding world of NASCAR racing.
Join us each week as we bring you closer to the NASCAR action with exclusive interviews and all the news and rumors you need with your favorite drivers, team members, and industry insiders.
So whether you're a fan of super speedways, short ovals, or road racing, or you've just watched Talladega Nights, Pit Pass NASCAR is the podcast you've been waiting for.
Get ready to fuel your passion for NASCAR like never before. Subscribe now to Pit Pass NASCAR on your favorite podcast platform or head to evergreenpodcast.com and get ready to join us.
Launching in the fall on Evergreen Podcast Network. Follow us on social media at pitpass_NASCAR to stay up to date with everything you need to know about the podcast.
Next Chapter Podcasts.